Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Nun Vav Amud Bet by the Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Akiva, Danti Lifnei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva, whose Rebbeim include both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. So here Rabbi Akiva is describing his experience of bringing a suggestion of a Kal V'chomer before Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. It's also interesting to note that Rabbi Akiva many times in Shas, his thought process is hers. Ability to deal with halachot many times is through logical arguments or through more unconventional meanings because he has less of a mesora than many of the other chachamim. So he's relying heavily on his ability to take information that he has and expand upon it or extrapolate it. And that's what he's doing here. You see, I'm Rabbi Akiva, Danti Lifnei Rabbi Eliezer, Ma'im Etzem Kisora, She'enu Mitamei Adam Be'ohel. We know that when it comes to an etzem kiseora, as the Mishnah already mentioned to us, it's tamei magao masa, but not mitamei bohel. A nazir migaleach al mago val maso. When it comes to a nazir who comes into contact with an etzem kiseora, he undermines his nazirut. Revi adam, shehu mitamei adam bohel. Revi adam, as we know from the Mishnah in Olot, is mitamei b'magao masa, but more importantly, is mitamei bohel, which makes it a much more chamur tuma. Enudin she nazir megaleach al magav amasa. It's certainly coming into contact or carrying such a volume of dam should be sufficient grounds for undermining the nizirut. Our Mishnah said before that you need a chatzi log dam in order to be tamei ba'ohel and to undermine the nizirut. Now, from the Pashtuta Mishnah, it seems that Rabbi Akiva is not arguing on that point. He's only arguing on the point that if you magal masa with regards to Revi Adam Log should be sufficient grounds to undermine the Nizirut, but yet maybe Chatzi Log should be the threshold for Ohel. The Mefaresh points it out, and so does Tosafot that in Ochanami, Rabbi Akiva himself believes that even Tumat Ohel would be problematic with regards to Revi Adam. That Revi Adam would be mitamei bohel, which everybody agrees to, but he also thinks it would undermine a nazir. The reason it doesn't bring it here is because it doesn't fit into the Kal V'chomer. Kal V'chomer can only bring you so far. Etzem Kisora is only undermining through magal masa. So the only thing he can learn from Etzem Kisora to Revi Et Adam is that magal masa would be sufficient grounds for undermining the nazirut. Amar li, maze Akiva, ein dani mikan Kal V'chomer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Urkunus dismisses Rabbi Akiva's suggestion. He says, we don't learn a Kal V'chomer like that. When I came and I said over my same Torah before Rabbi Yoshua, Amarli yafeh amarta, elakein amru alacha. So Rabbi Yoshua's bottom line is the same as Rabbi Eliezer, which this is not a Kal V'chomer and you can't do this. Rabbi Eliezer ben Urkus just dismisses Rabbi Akiva and says, Rabbi Akiva, you can't do this. You can't have such a Kal V'chomer. Rabbi Yeshua, first of all, compliments him on the attempt and on the logic and the learning. What you're saying has a lot of grounds to it, but there's one fault or failure in your Kal V'chomer, which is there's Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai involved. And by Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, we'll call it defies logic, which means that it's not subject to logical arguments. The mere fact that it's called Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai means that this is the Misora, and the Misora, number one, is narrow. It's only about that which it was said. And number two is, you can't either extrapolate from it or to it because of that fact that it's such a narrow scope, and it's Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Gemara now is going to clarify what exactly is the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai here. Ibailu, Etzem Kiseura Halacha. Is Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, then an Etzem Kiseura is Mitameh B'Magal Masa. Urvi et Adam Kal V'chomer. And now Rabbi Akiva is trying to learn from that in Kal V'chomer to Urvi et Adam. Vein dan in Kal V'chomer me'alacha. And you're not dan in Kal V'chomer from Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Because if it's already an exceptional din, you can't take an exceptional din and then extrapolate that to make it into the norm. And so that's what he says here. You can't use a Kal V'chomer lying on top of a Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai. Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai says this is not normative halacha. This is an exception to the rule, does not follow the normal rules of halacha, but rather an exceptional case. And because of that, you can't extrapolate from it to another case. Or, Dilmar Vietdam halacha, Ve'etzem Kisora Kal V'chomer. Now the language here is a little more difficult because the Kav HaChomer is not to etzem kisora. But Revi Adam Halacha means the fact that Revi Adam is metame be'ohel, that is Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. And now you want to use that to generate a Kav HaChomer, that's not going to work. Because the difference between Revi Adam and etzem kisora is the fact that you say that Revi Adam is metame be'ohel. But the fact that Revi Adam is metame be'ohel is only Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. So you now can't claim that Revi Adam is more chamur than etzem kisora because of the fact that it's metame be'ohel. They're both metame be'maga u'masa. Question of ohel, Revi Adam has this extra piece, which is metame be'ohel. But that's all Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. So now you can't come and try through that extra Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai and say, oh, Revi Adam is more chamur than etzem kisora. Let's take the dinim that are applied by etzem kisora and apply it to Revi Adam. Because the whole reason it's more chamur is Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai, and that doesn't give you real evidence about the character of Revi Adam, because it's all Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. And Vein Dam in Kav HaChomer mi halacha, it's not really mi halacha, but really, you can't use an halacha to establish the chomer in the Kav HaChomer. Tashma, where it says, etzem kiseora halacha, Revi Adam, Kav HaChomer. Very straightforward here, we have the brayta that says it out, straight out. That etzem kisora is a din halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, and Revi Adam we learn from that through a kav v'chomer. Vein dan in kav v'chomer mehalacha, and we're not done a logical argument out of something that's halacha l'moshe Mitzinai. So here's the answer to that question as to what Rabbi Yeshua meant: that etzem kisora is halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, and even though your logic is flawless, and even though what you're saying makes a lot of sense, you can't extrapolate the halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, and therefore it's not applicable in this case. Right, with that we complete the seventh perek, Adron Alach, Kohen Gadol. Right, now we begin the next perek. Next perek, we got a little preview of it in the previous perek, but issues that involve safek, and how do we deal with sfekot with regards to a nazir. Sheshnez nizirim, shamar lahem echad. There are two nizirim, and one witness says to them, Ra'iti echad mehem shenitma. I saw one of you guys become tamei, ve'eni odea izimikem. And I don't know which one of you two became Tameh. I know one of you guys became Tameh, but I don't know which of you it is. The Mifarash over here says, Shekiblu alehem nizirut biyachad. That they had a nizirut that they accepted at the same time. Therefore, the duration and the nature of the nizirut is the same. That will become important in the case as to the fact that they are on the same track. The truth is, it doesn't really need to be that they are accepting nizirut biyachad, but rather that their nizirut terminates at the same time. That's probably the more important factor. Though, the whole situation or case can be relevant even if they have different times. It'll just create a little bit more of a problem. So to simplify the case, we just say that they have the same nizirut, but obviously it can be expanded to cases where they don't. So now, over here, Tosafot asks your question, which is, why do we believe this guy? So Tosafot says, Tzarich lomar, shehein shotkim, that they are silent. If they contradicted him, if they said that what he's saying is incorrect, it'd be over. One aid has no right here to cause issues, be'isur, for other individuals. And if they deny the fact or they contradict him, it would not be relevant at all. But what Tosfot says here is, shutkim. They are silent. And here the silence is acquiescence, which is they basically are accepting his testimony. And therefore, we have to deal with the testimony of this Eid Echad. So now what do you do? Megalchin u'mevin kurban tuma v'kurban tahara. They both together jointly b'shutafut bring korbanot of a nazir tamei and the korbanot of a nazir tahor. And through this, they're going to discharge the obligations, but also take care of the safek. V'omer. And they say, Tosfot over here says, lav davka nakat omer. They don't literally have to say this, but rather this is the intent in bringing the korbanot. The korbanot are brought stam, and then this will be what the outcome of bringing these korbanot is, but not that they have to articulate this t'nai. Others believe that they do have to articulate the t'nai because of the issue of the cost of the korbanot, that the korbanot of tara and korbanot of tuma are not of the exact same price. One involves behemoth, one involves birds, and so therefore there's a value differential, and someone's going to have to be mochel on their half of the shutafut, and allowing one individual to take the more expensive korbanot and one of them to take the less expensive. And so because of that, maybe you do have to articulate or articulate the ability of each one to take what's rightfully theirs. So, im ani hu tamei, if I am the one who is tamei, korban tumah shali, then the korban tumah is, I'm being discharged of my obligation through that. The korban Torah shalcha, and the korban of Tara is for you. Im ani hu a tahor, and then if I'm the one who never became tamei, korban Tara shali, then the korbanot the Tara for me, the korban tumah shalcha, and the korban tumah belongs to you. And obviously then they do a giluach. So the giluach, mimonav shach. Either the giluach is a giluach tahara, on the korbanot tahara, or the giluach is a giluach for nazir tamei, and that's done after you bring the korbanot tuma. So either way, they can do a giluach, and the giluach is associated with the korbanot and the proper korbanot. But now they have to deal with, one of them was tamei, and now needs to count the new nazirut, and then bring korbanot tahara, but we just don't know which one of them it is. It's sofrim shloshim yom. They wait another 30 days. Now 30 days here is because we're assuming that they have a stam nizirut. Whatever the duration of the nizirut is, that's the amount of time they have to wait again. They have to do a new nizirut b'tahara. And this is where it became important in the beginning that the Mefaresh says that they both ended at the same time or they have the same nizirut, because otherwise you'd have to wait the amount of time of the longer nazir and it'll complicate the case. And then at the end of the second count here, they bring a korban tahara b'shutafut again. V'omrim, im ani hu atamei, if I'm the one who's tamei, korban tumah shali, then the original korban tumah was mine. The korban tahara shalcha, and the original korban tahara was yours. V'ze korban taharati, and the one that we're bringing now is my korban v'tahara. Im ani hu atahor, if I'm the one who was tahor all along, korban tahara shali, the original korban tahara was mine. Korban tumah shalcha, and the korban tumah in the first series was yours. And this korban now is your korban b'tahara. And then they again bring the korban, and they both do a giluach. And then only at that point are they permitted to drink wine and be mitameh the meitim. Before that point in time, they have a safek, and neither of them can violate that. They can't cut their hair, they can't be mitameh the meitim, they can't drink wine until both of them are discharged because of this safek. So the Gemara says, Ktani shnei nizirim, שאמר להם, ראיתי אחד מכם שנטמע, ואיני יודע איזה מכם. So this is a case where the aide says that I saw you guys, one of you became tame, but I don't know which one of you it is. Am I? Why is that the case here? כל ספק תומה ברשות היחיד, מהיכל יפינמה, מסוטה. Where do we know that the din of ספק תומה is the חומרה, and that is only true ברשות היחיד? We've seen this many times. The Safek Tumah Bishuta Yachid is Tamei. Safek Tumah Bishuta Rabim is Tahor. The source for that is Sota. The next Masechta that we will learn is Sota. And that is because the way that the Tumah is expressed in the Parsha of Sota is Vehi Nistira. So that she was isolated or secluded. Isolated, secluded is with her, with the Boel. So there's only two of them over there. In that case, the din of sota is that we suspect that something happened. So what we learn from sota is that in cases where you're in reshut yachid, here the din of reshut yachid, or the definition of reshut yachid, unlike in other places in halacha, is that there were only two people found there. That's deemed to be a reshut yachid. In that case, that's a safek tumah, that'll be tameh. Now then, if you're in a reshut rabim here is defined as any more than two people. Because sota is two, then any more than two would be deemed a reshut rabim. In that case, it would be safek tumah is tahor. So that's what the Gemara wants to understand over here. Ma sota boel v'nivelet. Just like by the sota, you have two parties that are there. The adulterers, av kol safek tumah b'reshut yachid. And from there, we extrapolate the din to kol haTorah kula, that any safek tumah b'reshut yachid has a din of being tamei. But that, reshut yachid is, kon dika beitrei. That's only when there are two individuals there. That's the definition of reshut yachid. Bahacha, in our case here, what type of reshut yachid are we speaking about? Shnei nizirim, v'hai dekoi gabeon. You have the two nizirim, plus the witness means that there are already three people there. And we're talking about a safek tumah. That means that you have a safek tumah, birshut rabim. And the din of a safek tumah, birshut rabim is tahor. So why are we choshesh for this edut whatsoever? You're already in the world of Safek, and in the world of Safek, they should be Tor. Hatlata havale safek tuma b'shut harabim. Chol safek tuma b'shut harabim safek otor. So now you have three people. And you're dealing with the Safek Tumah B'Shut Rabim. Safek Tumah B'Shut Rabim is Safek Kol Tahor. And why should they bring any Korban Tumah? Why should we worry about Tumah at all? So Amar Rabba Baruhuna. So Rabba Baruhuna says, Ba'omer Ra'iti Tumah Shenizrika B'Neichem. I saw some Tumah that landed near you guys or somewhere where it could have contacted you. But that means, or the implications are, that he was standing far away. That this witness was not present with them, but rather in a different location where he could spot the Tumah. And you can see in the Rosh, he says, he's more than four Amot away from them. So the definition of Rishut Rabim is in a case where they're all within Dalet Amot of each other. If one of them is further away, like this individual who's testifying now seemingly was further away, then that's not deemed to be Rishut Rabim because the three of them are not in the same area or the same sphere. Others determined not by the physical distance, but the ability for all the parties there to become part of the safek or party to the safek. If they all can be party to the safek, then they're considered to be in one area. If they're not all parties to the safek, then they're considered to be in different areas. Or there are others that suggest, which is much more difficult than our sugya here, is that the ability of them to see each other or to be witnesses to each other, that's enough reason to believe that they're in the same sphere or in the same area. Although over here, it's clear that he is witnessing something, but he's considered to be in a different area. What you have to say is witnessing where they can see the actual events and testify to the events, as opposed to here where he can only testify to the general circumstance, but not to the particulars of the event. Now, Rav Ashi says, Amar Rav Ashi, Dekanami, the diuk is from the Mishnah, Diktani, Ve'eni Yodea Ezimikem. I don't know which one of you became Tamei. Why does he not know which one of them became Tamei? Because of the distance between him and the event, Shma Mina. Right, so your question is, I always thought the Gemara would answer it in this manner, which is that if, in a case where he sees one of them becoming Tamei, and then any day, I don't know which one of them is, then the real answer to this question is that we're not dealing with a classic case of Safek Tumah. That's the case of Safek Tumah, is that we're uncertain as to whether you became Tamei or didn't become Tamei. Over here, the way that the testimony is given is that we're certain that one of you is Tamei, we're just not certain which one of you it is. And that's a different form of Safek. And I would have thought the Gemara would answer it in that manner, which is that this isn't subject to the rules of Safek Tumah B'Shut Yachid or Safek Tumah B'Shut Rabim, because there's no Safek about the Tumah. We're Vadai about the Tumah, we're just a Safek about which person that is here. So whether that's still subject to the rules of Safek Tumah B'Shut Rabim B'Shut Yachid is questionable, but the Gemara does not take that route. The Gemara goes a different route here, which is almost reinterpreting the Mishnah in the sense that we thought originally he was certain about the Tumah, he was just uncertain about the person, to switching that he is certain about the Tumah, but uncertain about how it happened or what happened over here. He didn't see the individual that it touched or made Tamei. So in no way could he testify as to who it was. Originally, we thought he could testify who it was. He just forgot who it was. Now it's seemingly more like he wouldn't have been able to testify, period. He was too far away. And that's why he says, Eni Yodea, Ezimikem, is because he literally does not know which person it was, and he never did know which person it was. And Shma Mina, that they're not considered to be in the same sphere. And therefore, it's a Safek Tumah B'Shut Yachin, and not a Safek Tumah B'Shut Harabim. But now that the Gemara does learn this way, it does raise a secondary issue, which Tosafot notes that if Safek Tumah B'Shut Yachid is Tamei, then each one of them individually should be Chayav to bring a Korban. Why are they only bringing one Korban between them? Or explain also why each one of them cannot just bring a Korban, but they have to do it B'Shutafu, they have to do it together. So Tosafot over here says, V'yesh Tomar, D'lo Gmiri Misota, Elo Devar She'efshar Liot Kisota, De'efshar She'nitmeit, that when we learn out from Sota that Safek Tumah B'Shut Yachid is Tamei, that's only when the possibility of both of them being Tamei. But here, where there's no possibility of them both being Tamei, then we have to suggest over here that the Safek leads us to a position where we are going to try to discharge the obligation by bringing one Korban between them, and almost equivalent to the way that we had suggested maybe the Gemara should set up the case, which is a case that it's a Safek Tumah, we're just uncertain as to who the person is, not uncertainty within the Tumah or a Safek in each individual that there is this afek tuma where they both could possibly be tamei over here. Okay, now the Gemara says, Mekalchim umevi'in. They cut their hair and they bring the korbanot. V'amai, dilma lav tamei minun, v'ka'avid hakafa. Maybe they're not tamei, and now you're running yourself into a problem of doing or violating the Isur of lotakifu bat roshchem in the face of no mitzvah. So in terms of the first cutting or the first series of items that they do, mimonov shach, they needed to do it. Which is that whether they are a nazir tor or a nazir tamei, they needed to cut their hair at that point in time, no matter what. At the minimum, they're a nazir tor and they have to cut their head. At worst, they're a nazir tamei and they also have to cut their head. The real question revolves around the second series, where they both cut their hair there again and bring the korban tahara. Over there, it's much more questionable because one of them is not a nazir bit tuma. And since he never became tamei, he's already done with his nazirut. How can he come over here and shave his whole head? He's in violation of the Isur of Hakafa. So Amar Shmuel, Shmuel answers the question, Bishav Katan. I made a case of an Ishana Katan where the Isur of Lotakifu Pat Roshchem is not relevant. By a woman, we'll see why it's not relevant to her. All of the mitzvot with regards to the Zakan and to the Pat Rosh are not relevant by a woman. The Katan is because he's Lav Baron Shinhu. So now, the Lukma Bigadol, why don't you just set it up as being someone who is of age? And all you have to say is that when you shave your entire head, there's no violation of lotakifu et pa'at roshchem. It's only pa'at rosh when there's a remainder of the rosh. If the whole rosh is gone, you shave off all the hair, then the pa'at rosh that's left over is not a pa'at. And then when you shave it off, you're not in violation of lotakifu pa'at roshchem. So Gemara says, mitalo mokila hacha. The fact Shmuel does not take this approach, Shma Minaka Savar Shmuel, from here you will conclude that Shmuel believes, Hakavat Kol Rosh, Shma Hakafa. That Shmuel must believe that when you shave off your head, your whole head, then you're still in violation of Lotakifu et Pat Roshchem. And that's why he did not give this answer. He didn't go down that route because he doesn't believe it's true. And therefore we can conclude that Shmuel's position is Hakavat Kol Rosh, Shma Hakafa. If you cut all your hair off, then how can you talk about Peah Rosh? Peah is only in reference to your total Rosh being there. Like, for instance, in Peah, which the requirement is to give away a corner of your field to the Aniyim. You're not allowed in that case to give away the entire field, because then there's no longer Peah. You're not giving away a corner of your field, you're giving away the entire field. There's only a Peah if there's something residual to the field. And the same thing over here. There's only a Peah to Rosh if there is a hair on the remainder of the Rosh. Again, there are others disagree, and more along the lines of what you're suggesting, which is Peah to Rosh is an indication of location, not an indication of a reference to the remainder of the hair on the head. But you have two opinions with regards to this. All the Gemara is proving is that Shmuel's position is clearly that Akabat Kol Rosh Shma Hakafa. Mazucha Matni Lala Shmaita De Shmuel Aseifa. Mazucha says this on the latter half, which is Nazir Shayatamei B'Safek Umuchlat B'Safek Uchel B'Kodeshim Nachar Shishim Yom Umegaleach Dalid Tiglachot. Now this is the Mishnah that we quoted on Friday's Daf and Daf Nunhei. And that's the Mishnah we're going to see on the bottom of Nun Tet, Amud Bet, and we'll learn about it on Samach. But this is the Safek, where an individual is a Nazir, but he became a Safek Mitzorah Mukhlat, and Safek Tamei. And now how does he deal with the situation? So we said over there that he has to wait 60 days in order to discharge or get out of the problem of Mitzorah, and an additional 60 days to get out of his Nazirut Batara. We spoke about the different permutations in Sfeikot there, what he's doing. Again, we'll deal with it again on Daf, Nun Tet Amud Bet, and Samach in more detail as to what exactly he does to discharge his obligation. But over there, he ends up shaving his head four times. And he shaved his head four times as partly as uncertainty. Now, the truth is, he does more than shave his head. He actually, in the first two instances, shaves his entire body, not just his head, because he's a Safek Mitzorah. In the first two cases. And a mitzorah not only shaves his head, but shaves his entire body. That means that not only is he in violation of lotakifu et pat roshchem, he's possibly in violation of lotashchit et pat zkanecha, that you're not allowed to cut your beard. And so that's what the Gemara says over here. If you say the Shmuel statement on the Seifa, then what are you going to do with this? V'ha'aka avid. Now we have an argument so here, hakafa, but if you look in the Bali Atosafot, he says, you have on the zakan, you have hashchata, and on the rosh, you have hakafa. The girsa of the mifarish is va'akavid hashchata, which makes sense also here, because you're cutting with his mitzvah, you're cutting the entire body, you're in violation of hashchata zakan for the first two cuttings. And then the later two cuttings, you're in violation of Hakafat Harosh. So again, here, the first one for sure he's okay with, because Mimono Shach, he's either a Mitzora, a Nazir Tameh, or a Nazir Tor. In all those cases, he would have to do Hakafah. It's only in the subsequent of kafot or removing of the hair that you start running into problems, because you only do those mitzafeh, not out of certainty. So now he's doing a hakafah nashkata, and with Shmuel b'isha v'katan. It's a case of isha katan, and that's where Shmuel says it on the seifa, that the reason that this can be done here is because we're talking about someone who's not a bar chiyuva, or someone who's not relevant, the mitzvah of hashkatat hazakan or hakafat rosh. So Amar Rav Huna, a makifet hakatan arei hu chayav. Someone who shaves the head of a katan is chayav. Now, this is clearly different than what Shmuel just suggested over here. Shmuel says it over here that we're talking about an isha and a katan, implying that someone who cut that katan's head would not be in violation. Rav Huna says that if you cut the hair of a katan, meaning that you take off his peyot, that you are responsible for that, you are chayav for that. So the person who cuts, if the makif, the one who cuts the corners or pe'at arosh of the katan, will be in violation of lo tukivu et pe'at roshchem. So Amalei Rav Adar Ba'ava le Rav Huna. Rav Adar Ba'ava says to Rav Huna, vididach man megalech lahom. Your little ones there, who's shaving their heads? The Mefresh explains over here was that it was a common practice in their day when a child was either weak or sick, that they used to shave off the hair as part of the recuperation, or the healthy recuperation, or well, I don't know if that was also to remove lice. Whatever reason they did it, they were shaving off the heads of the kids entirely. And Rav Adar Ba'ava spots the children of Rav Huna, the little children of Rav Huna, and now their heads are completely shaven. So he says to him, who's shaving the heads of your children? Look, according to me, which we're going to see, Rav Adar Ba'ava believes that there is no violation when you shave the head of a katan. Then anybody could do it. The father could do it, the mother could do it, anybody could do it. And I understand why. But you, the Shitatcha, that believes that anybody who shaves the head of a katan is in violation of Tekivu Pad Roshchem, who's taking care? Who shaved your kids' heads and is in violation of your mitzvah? So he responds to him, Arlei Chova. He says, Chova is the name of Rav Huna's wife. And he says, my wife did it. So now, Rav Adar Ba'ava responds, Tik Birinun Chova Libaneha. That Chova should bury her children. Now, the way that Tosfot says it is that it was Kishkaga Yotzea Lifnei HaShalit. He took a strong stance. The language that he used was a little too strong. And we have a principle, and we've seen this in other places in Shas, Gemara and Tanit, with regards to Shmuel, that when sometimes when a tzaddik says something, even though this wasn't his intent, it comes true. It's a slip-up that comes out of the ruler's mouth, but once he said it, he can't take it back. It's done. The way that the Rosh explains it over here, he says, Havi kishkaga yitzim ifnei shalit, af afi shalo kilel ota. He wasn't cursing her. He was just using this as an expression of his disbelief, which is saying, does Chovah really want to bury her children? I mean, she's doing this Isser and she wants to bury her children? More like a rhetorical question rather than a klala. But nevertheless, because he expressed it in this manner, kulu shanei de Rav Adar Ba'ava lo yikayim leizara de Rav Huna. All the years of Rav Adar Ba'ava, Rav Huna was unable to either have children, or the children that he had passed away and were buried because of this little interaction between them. Michte. Gemara says, Tavayu svirlu, both of them agree, akafat kol rosh shma hakafa. It's clear here that both Rav Huna and Rav Adar Ba'ava believe that shaving off the entire head is problematic. Because if not, then the easier answer to the question is that akafat kol rosh lo shma hakafa, and that's why the kids' heads were shaved. The fact that there is even a discussion between them shows you that they both believe that a kavat rosh is problematic, even if you do the entire rosh. But my kamiflege, what's the issue? What are they arguing about? My kamiflege, they don't really have an open machloket between them, but they have a disagreement with regards to how the iser of lotakifu works. And now the Gemara wants to understand, please explain to me how they got to their opinions or why their opinions different. Rav Huna savar, lotakifu bat roshchem, lo tashchit et pat zikanecha. You're not allowed to do a kafat rosh. You're not allowed to take off your peyot. You're also not allowed to cut your beard, take off the corners of your beard. Kol sheyeshno hashchata, yeshlo hakafa. Anybody who is subject to the rules of hashchatat zakan is subject to the rules of hakafat rosh. V'hani nishay, ho v'letnuhu b'hashchata. Women are not subject to the rules of taking off the corners of the beard, because a woman doesn't have a beard. and therefore Hashkatat HaZakan is not a mitzvah that is relevant to her. That Hekesh, then too, Hakafat HaRosh, tells you, let Nehob Nami b'Hakafa. Therefore, there is no din of Hakafa by them. So Rav Huna believes that women are totally precluded from this mitzvah. That means that not only is there no restriction for them to have their Pa'at HaRosh or Zakan removed, if a woman for whatever reason has a beard, if she took it off, it would not be in violation. Or if she cut the corners of her head, it would not be in violation of Tekavi Uparat Roshchem. Not only is that true with regards to herself, it's also true of her doing it to someone else. She's not subject to the rules of Lo Takifu, do not do it to others. So she not only is not chayevet when it's done to her, she's also not chayevet if she does it to others. And that was Rav Huna's suggestion. That's why his wife was cutting his children's heads, because he believed the woman was totally exempt. Rav Adar Abba Savar, Echad HaMakif v'Echad HaNikaf b'mashma. The pasuk includes both the makif and the nikaf. V'itkish makif the nikaf. And the one who perpetrates the cutting has the same din as the one who it is done to, the object of the cutting. Ko'echad nikaf mechayayiv. Anytime that the object of the cutting, means the one whose hair is being cut, corners of their head, or corners of their beard are being cut, anytime they are chayav, makif nami chayav. The makif is also chayav, like katan. Hovehu gufei lab bar onshinu, de mechayev. Since this youngster, a katan, is not held accountable, he's not a bar onshin, therefore there's no chiyuv in terms of his pa'at arosh, so too, makif nami lo mechayev. Someone who cuts his hair would not be chayav. So that's a Rav Adar Ba'ava's position. Rav Ba'ava's position is, according to me, there's no problem here. You want to cut the young child's head and shave off all his hair, the father can do it, the mother can do it, anybody who wants to can do it, because the child is not a bar chiyuva. And the child's not a bar chiyuva, then the one who perpetrates this or does this to him will also not be culpable for his actions over here. But he believes that a woman is included, meaning that if a woman exercises this on someone who is a bar chiyuva, then she would be chayevet, even though she herself has no din of Hakavat HaRosh, but if she exercises that on a man, then she would be chayevet because of this hekesh between the makif and nikaf. So the makif is subject to the rules of the nikaf. That's the way Rav Adar Ba'ava learns. On the other hand, Rav Huna believes that the key element here is the connection between the Hashkatat HaZakan and the Hakafa. Anybody who is subject to Hashkatat HaZakan is in the world of Hakafa. If you're not in the world of Hakafa, you're not chayav no matter who you cut. That's why he says that the woman is petura from doing the kafat harosh on the katan, because he's not a bar onshin. So why did Rav Adar Ba'ava get upset? Because he agrees that the woman doing it to the katan is actually petura, not chayevet. But he says, l'shitatcha. He says, if you believe that a katan is chayav in a kafat harosh, then the woman would also be chayevet in a kafat harosh. What Rav Adar Ba'ava says, it doesn't make a difference if it's a woman or a man. It depends on the object, the nikaf. And if you, Rav Huna, the Shita Chal, believe that a katan is subject to the rules of Hakafat HaRosh, then the woman should also be subject to the Hakafat HaRosh, and she should be restricted just like the man. So Rav Adar Ba'ava says, in my Shita, I have no problem. I know how to get the katan's hair cut, because anybody can cut his hair. According to your Shita now, you say that katan's chayav, there's no way you could believe that the woman should be able to do it. That would be improper in this case. So now, the Tosafot over here goes into detail to explain a little more about the understanding of this Hekesh that Rav Adar Ba'ava brings of the Makif to the Nikaf. Because Tosafot raises two issues. First of all, what about if a non-Jew does Hakavat HaRosh to a Jew? Or the other way around, a Jew does Hakavat HaRosh to a non-Jew. In that case, what are the rules here? So what Tosafot says is, if you look at the Pashtuta Pasuk, the Pashtuta Kra is talking about the Nikaf. It's talking about the individual whose head is being cut, because it says, Lutakifu et pat Roshchem. Roshchem means your head. It's a reference to the head of the one who is being cut. Everybody says that the Pashtuta Kra and the Ikar understanding of the Pasuk is, we're talking about the Nikaf. But if that was the case, then the verb used in the beginning of the Pasuk should have been Lutakufu. Do not cut pat Roshchem. What is Lutakifu? Which indicates that somebody else is actually taking the action. So that's where the limud comes out of for Rav Adar Ba'ava, is that the fact that the pasuk changed the din from nikaf and uses a verb that is relevant to a makif. That generates the hekesh between a makif and a nikaf. But now, Rav Huna disagrees and says that there is no hekesh between the makif and the nikaf, because the mainstay or the main drusha of the pasuk is about a nikaf. The makif is just brought from this extraneous lashon that is brought in the pasuk, and therefore he says that that doesn't give you a reason to be makish them. The whole fact that there's a makif here at all is because of a ribuy in the pasuk. And that ribuy is not going to make a den that the makif and the nikaf are equivalent. So Rav Huna says that you can't be makish the makif and the nikaf, because the nikaf is what the pasuk is speaking about. The makif is just brought in through a ribuy. And then Rav Adar Abba says, well, since the pasuk was talking about a nikaf and switched to a makif, that's reason enough to say that there should be a hekesh between them. Now, Tosafot notes here that there are two arguments between Rav Huna and Rav Adar Abba. First of all, they argue about a woman doing a kavat rosh to someone else, where Rav Huna says that a woman is completely ptura from the parsha, whereas Rav Adar Abba says that a woman is determined by the nikaf. Depends on who the nikaf is, then the woman is determined. The woman herself, her being the one who exercises or does the cutting, it's not relevant that she's a woman, it's relevant that who she's doing this to. And she's doing it to someone who's a bar chayuva, she will be chayevet. That's Rav Adar Abba's position. Rav Huna believes that the woman is outside the parsha of lo tekifu pat rosh chem, and that means both in terms of her pat rosh, as well as her doing it to someone else. So with regards to the woman, that's their first machloket, that Rav Adar Abba believes that a woman is chayevet if she cuts someone else's peyot that are chayav. She is ptura herself. If her peyot arosh are cut, she is ptura. And again, this goes back to what we said about the pasuk, that the ikar pasuk is said about a nikaf. And therefore, as far as the woman's hair herself, she's ptura because the ikar pasuk is about a nikaf, and it's not relevant to her. With regards to makif, that is subject to who she's cutting, and that will be the determinant factor for Rav Adar Abba. Rav Huna says no, that a woman is left out of the parsha completely. That if the nikaf, which is the ikar din of the pasuk, is connected to anything because of the hashkata, the zakan, that tells you also below takifu, she's not governed by that rule. That's number one difference between them. The second difference between them is with regards to a katan. That Rav Huna believes that if a gadol cuts the hair of a katan, he would be chayav. Because a gadol is relevant in the parsha of tokatifu rat roshchem. Therefore, when he cuts the katan's hair, he is chayav. The other hand, if a woman cuts the katan's hair, she is turah because she's not relevant to this parsha. On the other hand, Rav Adar Abba believes that both a gadol and an isha that cuts the katan's hair is patur. Since the katan is patur, so too is the person who exercises it or cuts it. So the machloket is both by an isha and by a katan. And that machloket basically gives them their opinions over here, where Rav Huna believes, even though a katan is relevant in the parsha of a kavat arosh, it means that if a gadol cut his hair, it would be problematic. Nevertheless, an isha can cut the hair of the katan because she's not relevant to the parsha, and that's why he had his wife cut the hair of the little boys. The other hand, Rav Adar Abba says that a katan is outside the parsha of Chashkata Zakan, the Gabei, anyone, because he's not a bar chiyuva, and anybody who cuts him is also not culpable because they're doing it to someone who's not a bar chiyuva. And therefore, both a ish or an isha that does it to a katan would be patur, and that's why he believed that you could cut that kid's hair. And that's what he got upset about with Rav Huna. Rav Huna, you think that a katan, when a gadol does it to him, is chayav. If that's the case, so too, then an isha that does it to him is chayav, because that indicates that you think he's a bar chiyuva. If he's a bar chiyuva, then the one who cuts him is also culpable. And that's why Rav Adar Abba got upset at Rav Huna. So then we asked if Rav Adar Abba believes that there is such a hekesh between the makif and the nikaf, then why don't we say that it goes the other way around too, from the makif to the nikaf? And therefore, if the makif was not a bar chiyuva, like a goy, then he should be able to cut the Jew's head, and the Jew would not be in violation of patarosh. Im tomar the Rav Adar makish makif le nikaf, who adin nikish nikaf the makif? Why does he only have it in one direction, where we say the makif is like the nikaf? Let him say also that the nikaf is like the makif. Okay, kohecha the makif la bar chiyuva. The one who's cutting is not a bar chiyuva. Nikaf nami patur. Then the one who's being cut should also be patur. If that's the case, let a non-Jew cut your hair. If you go to a haircut with a non-Jew and he cuts off the peyot rosh, it should be fine because of this hekesh between the nikaf and the makif. So then he says, "Ve'ish lamar the Rav Adar makif nikach makshinan." It's unidirectional. It's only the makif that is learned from the nikaf. Mishum the ikar chiyuva dekra an nikaf k'tiv. The main part of the pasuk, or the pashtut of pasuk, is talking about the nikaf. So the ikar pasuk is the nikaf. That is a given that that's where he's going to be chayav, is when he's a nikaf. Now the question is, how does that relate to the makif? And that's the hekesh that's drawn here, that the makif is learnt from the nikaf, But not that. You can learn the other way around as well, though, from the makif to the nikap. So the Tosafot says you can't say that because it's a unidirectional limud because of the nature of the pasuk. The pashtut of pasuk is about the nikaf. The ribui is about the makif, and therefore the only direction we're going to learn is from the nikaf to the makif, not the other way around. According to Rav Huna, it doesn't learn a hekesh between the makif and the nikaf. Then why don't we say over there? That's what Tosafot asks over here. Rim tomar the Rav Huna to lo mekish makif the nikaf. Afagav the nikaf lar bar chiyuvahu. Even when the nikaf is not a bar chiyuva. The makif is still chayav. He's independent of who he's doing this to. And someone who cuts the piyata rosh of a ovid kochavim should be chayav. Because he is the one who is perpetrating, culpable, and he's a Jew. Who he does do, the object is not important. Kamo makif le katan. Just like when you were makif a katan, according to Rav Huna, if you're a bar chayuva, then you're going to be chayav, even though the katan is patur. He says, "V'dochak lechalek mishum dekatan ato lechlei chal chiyuv." So it's hard to differentiate, which is the way that the Gemara differentiates in many places, that a katan in the end will turn into a bar chiyuva. A goy will always remain a goy and never be a bar chiyuva, and therefore there's more reason to be machmir by a katan than there is by a goy. But here, that's not relevant because hashtalam bar chiyuva hu. Right now, he's not an obligated party. If he's not an obligated party, then the makif is chayav, it should equally apply to a goy and a katan. So he says, "Anir l'raf the yishlamar v'ho k'ti pat roshchem." Since the pasuk expresses it as a pat roshchem, l'Yisrael kol yikra. The pasuk is only talking about Jews and not non-Jews. Then he says, "The tarchiun v'ho k'makif et aisha imechayev k'mo b'katan l'Rav Huna." According to Rav Huna, if a man came along and did a kapata rosh for an isha, would he be chayav? By the katan, he's v'alav bar chiyuvo, and the makif is chayav for doing such an action because he's doing it to a katan, and all that matters is that the makif is a bar chiyuva. If it was an isha doing it, she would be ptura because she's not a bar chiyuva. But that means that, according to this, if a man cut a woman's hair, then he's a makif, is a bar chiyuva. The woman, doesn't matter that she's ptura, she's like a katan, and he should be chayav for that. Ah, what about the Ovid Kochavim? That we answered and said, oh, this pasuk is only about Israel. But by a woman, she's also Israel. So maybe according to Rav Huna, a man who cut a woman's pa'at arosh would be chayav. Now the answer most likely is that there's a difference here. By a katan is relevant in the world of hashkatat arosh. It's just that he's patur because he's a lav baronshin. It's a technical problem that makes him patur. And that's why the makif is chayav in that case. By a woman, it's not a technical problem that makes her. She is not subject to the rule of kakavat arosh at all. And therefore being makif arosh is like the equivalent of cutting the hair on your arms, on your legs. It doesn't have any relevance over here. And that's why maybe, even according to Rav Huna, if a man cut a woman's pa'at arosh, he should not be chayav because she's not relevant to the parsha of a katan arosh. Versus the katan who's relevant, he's just patur. And that's why you would be chayav in that case according to Rav Huna. And as Tosafot points out over here, the sugyot and shas seem to support Rav Huna's position. And that's what he says in Nirali, the Kaimalon ki Rav Huna. That we hold like Rav Huna, the Isha Shario, Akifa Katan, Vuadin the Gadol. That the din that a woman is allowed to be Makif the Katan, Vuadin the Gadol, and if she did to a Gadol, would be the same thing. The Sujya Shas Kabate. Because many places in Shas, we find that the Gemara follows this position of Rav Huna. Okay, we're going to stop over here, three lines from the bottom of Nanzayin Amud Bet.